Well, our state has a lot to offer, especially in terms of our wildlife and our stunning landscapes, our lakes, our rivers and streams. Sad to say there are some threats to our environment, to those waterways that we have, and it's too bad. Invasive species of all kinds. We're going to talk about invasive aquatic species with you today, though. Zero in on that with a couple of guests. From the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Bob Wakeman with us. And Bob is the Water Resources Management Specialist for the Wisconsin DNR. And Bob, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Larry. Morning, everybody.
Appreciate it very much. And Paul Skowinski, a statewide coordinator of the Wisconsin Citizen Lake Monitoring Network for UW Extension's Lakes Program. He's also author of Aquatic Plants of the Upper Midwest. And Paul, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Larry.
We had last time Bob and I, or Paul and I talked, I guess it was at State Fair. Mm-hmm. We were in front of a small crowd of people and had a good time talking about some of the invasives. And, you know, aquatic invasives, maybe we should start with sort of defining that so people kind of know the parameters. And I don't know, Bob, you want to take that to start with?
Sure. Just what are they? Aquatic invasive species are anything from a plant or a fish or a bug that doesn't belong here. And not only does it not belong here, it can do damage once it's here. So just like you might have tulips in your garden, tulips may not have been native to Wisconsin, but they don't do any damage once they're here. Aquatic invasive species don't belong here, and they can do damage.
And there are some that are pretty that are quite worrisome. And I know, Paul, that's kind of why we have the Lake Citizen Lake Monitoring Network for UW Extension.
Right, right. So we have a lot of citizens around the state that monitor for aquatic invasive species that come in. They're looking for anything from Eurasian milfoil to zebra mussels to other things that they may not even recognize, but they at least recognize something as suspicious and forward that to the proper person to get it identified.
So he mentioned a couple there, Bob. Are those the two worst, or there's more, too, aren't there?
Well, people ask me, what's the worst aquatic invasive species? And I really can't identify any one that's worse than another. they really don't belong here. They all have a very similar impact on our lakes or streams or wetlands. And it's displacing the native species. It's lowering diversity and lowering overall quality of our water resources.
I haven't addressed our listeners directly, but I want to tell you that you can join in with your own questions and comments. Maybe you have a question about a specific aquatic plant or an invasive species. I hope you'll join in with that. What problems are you dealing with, or maybe none at all? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. What are you doing to try and prevent the invasive aquatic plants? Are you doing anything in your own backyard? Or do you have questions about what to do? And certainly, again, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And we have a new one out there, Bob, newly found invasive, which is, and I know Paul and I have talked about this at the State Fair here a few weeks back, but it's called Starry Stonewort, which is an interesting name.
Yeah, it is a newly discovered plant, at least in Wisconsin. It's something that showed up in Little Muskego Lake in Waukesha County late last year. And we now know that it's in five of our lakes in southeast Wisconsin, Little Muskego being the first, Big Muskego just down the road, Long Lake in Racine County, Silver in Washington County, and Pike Lake in Washington County. So it's a new plant for us, unfortunately.
Oh, and Paul, you were talking about, why is it such a miserable thing to have?
Well, in Michigan, it has invaded large areas of some of the lakes over there. They've had a lot of trouble trying to keep it under control. So herbicide treatments are one of the major ways that we deal with aquatic invasive plants in Wisconsin lakes, and they have been largely unsuccessful in Michigan. So that's one of our main worries about the species here.
And Bob, this particular one, you guys have been monitoring, the DNR has been monitoring this a bit. Is it the department, or are you having other people involved, or?
Well, like we usually try to do, we try to get as many people involved in this stuff as we can. There are only so many Bobs out there looking for aquatic plants or aquatic invasive species, so we rely on guys like Paul. We rely on all of our partners, whether it's a lake association, a district, a county staff. It's amazing the army of people that will help us look for things that we know we don't want to find. So it's a great partnership.
What happens, or why is it such a miserable thing to have in your lake? Paul, do you want to take that?
Sure. Well, starry stonewort is a type of large algae. It looks a lot like a plant, but it can be a couple meters tall. It can be found anywhere from in very shallow water, a matter of inches, to 20 or more feet. So it can really
20 feet. Does it grow that tall to get?
It does not. It will not grow 20 feet tall, but it can grow down that deep, and it may be a couple meters tall at that point.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it can occupy a very large area of the littoral zone of the lake, which is the area where plants grow and where a lot of young fish and turtles and other aquatic life live. So other species tend to have a fairly distinct area of the lake where they like to be, certain depth ranges or something, and this one doesn't seem to show that preference. So there's a potential that it could invade a large area of a lake and displace a lot of other native species.
And, of course, those other native species are what, you know, make our environment what it is, but it's also what other, like fish and so forth, need in order to survive, I assume.
Right, exactly.
We have Jerry in Central Wisconsin wondered, is there anything being done to stop this is a good question here that he's got from a foreign vessel, and he was wondering if there's anything being done to stop foreign vessels from bringing in ballast waters that bring in many invasives. Bobby?
Yeah, that's a really good question. People always say, well, why do we have to do all this stuff when all these ships are bringing in new things into our Great Lakes? That's a really good question. And fortunately, there have been some significant changes in how ballast water is managed on vessels that are going between the U.S. and foreign countries. They are now required to what we call rinse and spit. When they get mid-ocean, they have to discharge their ballast water. And for those that aren't familiar with ballast water, it's water that's pumped into an empty vessel so that it will travel across the ocean much more stably. And once they get here, they discharge that water and then take on their cargo and head back. So now if they're coming over with ballast water, they have to discharge that ballast water in mid-ocean and then take on new water before they come into the Great Lakes. And this has been extremely effective at preventing or stopping the arrival of new species into the Great Lakes system.
So the ballast water, it may be salt water, but at least it's not...
Right. It's not going to... You basically reduce the risk of bringing in any aquatic invasive species that may have been picked up at a foreign port, which otherwise would have been discharged at a Great Lakes port.
How does some of these, aside from ballast that's happened, how does something like starry stonewort find its way over here?
There are a number of pathways that we get aquatic invasive species. Organisms in trade. It's amazing what you can get on the internet. You can get just about anything through the mail these days. Mm-hmm. So organisms in trade is one. The bait fish industry is another. Those two are pretty important ones that we try to make sure we educate people so they know if they're going to buy something on the internet, what is okay and what is not okay to bring to Wisconsin.
So the internet is one of the biggest culprits.
That's a significant one.
That's really too bad. How does this survey work? How do you go about conducting the survey work?
For starry stonewort?
Yeah. Let's take that first.
Sure. For starry stonewort, we didn't have a lot of experience with it first off, so we had to rely on work that was done in Michigan and other states. And so Tim Plude, who's one of our rapid response specialists out of the Plymouth office, he started by just cruising the shoreline and looking for it. And once you find it, once you train your eye on what to look for, you can identify it, I won't say easily, but easier. And so he would cruise around the shoreline and look for starry stonewort. And there are other protocols that we use where we try to identify areas of a lake that are most likely to have invasive species. Boat launches are a big probability. River inlets or outlets, we also find invasive species. So those types of areas we try to target for our survey work.
And obviously, boat launches gives us a big clue as to how this stuff, any of these invasives, get moved from one place to another.
Yeah, boats and trailers are the number one way that we move invasive species around Wisconsin and even between states. That's why we, in Wisconsin, you are required to inspect your boat and trailer, remove any aquatic plants or mud that's on there, drain all the water, and don't move live fish between water bodies. And fortunately, we've got a great army of citizens that are out there that Paul and company will help train to help look for this stuff. So it's a great partnership.
Talking today about invasive aquatic species with a couple of guests, Paul Skowinski, statewide coordinator of the Wisconsin Citizen Lake Monitoring Network for UW Extension's Lakes Program, and Bob Wakeman. Bob's been involved for a long time. He's a water resources management specialist with our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Do you have questions about invasive aquatic plants or species? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post a question or maybe even a photo if you got a plant you wonder, what the heck is this invasive? Or is it an invasive? Post it up on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can do that as well. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Invasive aquatic species are what we're dealing with right now, and I hope you'll join in. Questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you, so give us a call or go on our Facebook page and post a question or a comment there. This, how much of, you know, let's take this starry stonewort as an example. Now, you need to, let's say you are backing your trailer down, boat trailer down into the water, and you pull up a whole leave a weed with the root and all, and you don't, I mean, is that what is required to spread it, or what is really required to spread? How much of that plant do you need?
Sure.
To move it from one place to another?
That's a good question. So starry stonewort is one of the species that can easily spread by small fragments. In the case of this species, it may be only a couple inches. It also produces these little starchy structures underneath the sediment surface that are called bulbils. And this is essentially a starch reserve for the plant, and it will produce a clone of that plant in a new location. So starry stonewort is a little different than some others in that there are only male individuals in North America. So it is a dioecious species. It means there's separate male and female plants. And having only males, that means there is no sexual reproduction going on. So there are no seeds or anything being produced. And therefore, it can only spread by fragments of itself and produce clones of itself. So it is not being spread by
birds
ducks or
something.
Yep,
yeah.
Exactly. It is being spread by fragmentation. And it's interesting that all five populations in Wisconsin are found at the boat landings on those five water bodies. Same thing with the population in Minnesota, as I understand. It was near the boat landing over there as well. So
well, we've got lots of callers online and lots of questions, and we'll take some calls right now. And a Facebook comment, too, from Karen in Minnesota. She just says the Minnesota walleye population crash in Lake Mille Lacs is thought to be caused by invasive species like zebra mussels. Fishing season is now closed on the lake, which causing significant economic loss among resort owners. And that lake, I'm sure, as you guys well know, that was one heck of a of a fish, of a walleye population.
Yeah, I don't know all the details, what's going on up in Minnesota and the Lake Mille Lacs, but it's obviously something we never want to experience. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds over the next couple of years.
Yeah, it really will. Lee in Waukesha, thank you for calling. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi there. We have a property on Fox Lake, Wisconsin in Dodge County. It's a shallow body of water, about a 2,000-acre lake that has a max depth about 20 feet. Recently, probably the past few years, we found evidence of zebra mussels in the lake. I was just curious on what some of the positive or negative long-term effects might be of having that species in the body of water there.
Yeah.
Good question, Lee. Zebra mussels are relatively small mussels, and they're one of the things they're very, very good at, and that's filtering water. Each one of these little mussels can filter about a liter of water a day. It doesn't seem like a lot, but when you put 40,000 mussels on a square meter and you figure how much water that is being filtered, you can see that it can really filter a lot of water. So what it does is it will filter out algae that it will consume. And it'll also filter out other things and basically poop the stuff it doesn't want out. So it tends to clear up the water. You might think, hey, that sounds great. Where can I get some? The problem is that what it's consuming is the base of the food chain for the rest of the lake. And whether it's an aquatic bug or a small fish that is dependent upon that same algae, they then will go hungry and the food chain will start to change. Another issue with zebra mussels is that they colonize hard substrates, rocks, pier posts, other mussels, and they're very sharp. They will cut your feet. They'll cut your legs. So you need to be very careful when you're walking in the littoral zone or in the shallow water zone so that you don't cut your feet or your legs because of zebra mussels. They also tend to clog up pipes. I remember sitting in my office in Milwaukee one day, and I got a call from a hotel in Milwaukee. It said, hey, our cooling system is broken. We opened it up, and it's full of zebra mussels. And I said, well, if you had a pipe that discharged out to the Milwaukee River, that's probably how they got in. He said, yeah, we did. So they had to tear down their entire cooling system because their entire pipe system was full of zebra mussels. So those are some of the examples of what they can do for you.
Wow. Is there a way? What did they do? Did they electrify their outlet pump or pipe, or what did they do?
I don't know how they ever cleaned that up. He never called me back, but it was obviously a very expensive repair.
Oh, I would think. Thanks, Lee, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Andrew and Franklin, it's your turn next. Hi, Andrew. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. Just a quick question. You mentioned that fish can get this, can get some of these diseases and stuff, and you can transfer them from lake to lake. If you were to have a, like a private pond, and you wanted to, fill it with some fish, or a private like lake, I guess what are the steps to go through the DNR to get clean fish, so that you don't you're not sure to transfer anything from pond to pond.
Well, I'm not specifically in that line of work, Andrew, but I know that if you work with a licensed fish nursery, you're going to be in much better shape than if you go somewhere else. So I would say start there, and I'd even say start with your local fish manager and get some advice on what type of fish you might want and what's available and where.
So the local fish manager, and you're talking about a DNR person here.
Right.
Would and also probably could tell you where to go to get the fish.
Right. There's a number of private nurseries that are out there that you can order fish from. And I believe there's a health check now on fish that are brought into the state, so they shouldn't have any fish diseases with them. But you certainly want to work with a certified or a licensed hatchery when you get your materials.
Yeah, that makes really good sense. Thanks, Andrew, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to John in Bayfield next. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm actually located in Iron River, Wisconsin, in Bayfield County, and off of a chain of lakes. And my question is, what sort of state resources there are available for Eurasian milfoil, which our chain of lakes has been infected with?
Do you mind saying which chain?
It's the Pike Lake Chain.
Pike Lake Chain, okay.
Yeah, outside of Iron River.
Yep.
The Wisconsin DNR has a number of grant programs that can assist you from planning to control. We really try to do what we can to assist lake organizations with everything from planning and prevention activities to control activities. So you probably work with maybe Alex Smith or Pamela Toshner up there in Bayfield. They would be perfect people to contact and ask them about what grants are available. You've got a grant deadline coming up, I believe, December 10th. So you want to contact them so that you can get your application materials together and apply for some of these funds that are available to help you do just what you're asking to do.
Yeah, makes good sense. Thanks a lot, John, for calling. I appreciate it. And I think, Paul, if I'm not mistaken, you, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I, as I recall, you and I were talking another time about one of the lake associations or one or more of the lake associations that have done a particularly good job of keeping invasives out of their lake. Am I forgetting that or remembering that correctly? Or?
Yes, I think, well, there's a couple that I can think of right off the top of my head. One of them is Long Lake in Washera County. They have a huge Clean Boats, Clean Waters program, a watercraft inspection program with volunteers, and they are a fairly large, very busy lake, but they have managed to keep pretty much every invasive species out. They regularly will find boaters coming in with things on their trailers, and they will encourage them to take that stuff off and help them do so. And they've been very successful in keeping invasives out. The other one I think that you're thinking of is the Porter's Lake in Washera County.
Oh, yeah.
They had Eurasian milfoil show up during a lake management plan survey in 2012, and the volunteers on the lake got very concerned as soon as they heard that news, and within days they were attending workshops to learn more about invasive species and Eurasian milfoil and how to deal with it. And it's great. They did their homework, and they were prepared to really hammer the stuff appropriately. And so they were able to remove about an acre and a half worth of Eurasian milfoil with a group of several dozen volunteers, using everything from snorkeling and scuba diving to wading to kayaking and pontoon boats and everything. And so they followed up with a small herbicide treatment the following spring that was largely successful, but there were some plants that remained. So they went in, they pulled all those ones out too. And it has been 27 months now since they have seen the last Eurasian milfoil plant on that lake. So they're incredibly excited that they were very successful in removing that plant from the lake and perhaps entirely.
And they even go around almost weekly or something, don't they? People go around the lake and monitor, just looking?
Right, exactly. So we have several aquatic invasive species volunteers through the Citizen Lake Monitoring Network on Porter's Lake, and they've been trained on identification of these things. They also know a lot of the native aquatic plants as well, so they're very good at recognizing if something doesn't belong in their lake. And they do go on generally a weekly basis in their kayaks. They have a couple of scuba divers on the lake that go out regularly and monitor the deeper areas. And they are very in tune to what's going on in their lake. And if Eurasian milfoil shows up again, they're going to know about it real quick.
Kind of the gold standard, I guess you'd say.
Absolutely.
For lake
yep.
monitoring.
Yep.
That's really the gold standard. And it's nice to know. And frankly, it actually can take that kind of commitment too, Bob. If you're going to get something, if you're going to beat it.
Yeah, it's amazing what you have to invest in order to monitor for it. You know, you're trying to find something that you don't want to find.
Yeah.
And that's not always the easiest thing to do, but it takes a tremendous amount of commitment. And once you find it, you really have to jump on it very quickly. And Paul just gave two great examples of lakes where they jumped on it quickly, they stayed on it, and they've been very successful. And we certainly couldn't do any of this without these types of volunteers and organizations.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's how many thousand lakes do we have here in the state, and to try and do that to even a 1%.
Yeah, it'd be impossible.
Yeah, really, really tough. And I guess that's why through UW Extension and this whole monitoring program is really really, really useful.
Right. Yeah, we rely on these volunteers to do this weekly or regular monitoring. We provide all the training and the equipment for free for these volunteers, and they provide their energy and their time, and they really help us out a lot, save the state a lot of money, and they're able to monitor those lakes a lot more frequently than staff possibly could.
Someone commented, on kind of unfortunately in a way, is that I work for a summer as a watercraft inspector. That was a few years ago, but I noticed that there was now only some signage on lakes like Lake Nook Bay in Marinette County this summer.
Naqua Bay.
That was it. So wondering, you know, if there should be more signage or... He says, I visited two popular landings with our rowing team recently. I realized no one was inspecting, removing weeds, or draining their live wells at both these landings. I do not feel the signage does enough good or any good, perhaps. Zebra mussels are now in that lake, which proves we must get tougher on boaters. And, Bob?
Yeah, the number of inspectors in the state of Wisconsin is very dependent upon, one, volunteers, and two, the number of grants that we can provide to lake organizations that will pay people to sit at a boat launch and talk to boaters. Yeah. Volunteerism has gone down. There aren't a lot of people that want to sit at a boat launch every mm-hmm. weekend or yeah. holiday weekends and talk to boaters about do this and don't do that. So a lot of lakes have turned to our grants to help pay people to do this. And while it's extremely successful, we provided almost $600,000 in grants last year for these inspectors around the state. But it really is dependent upon lake organizations that want to take this on, apply for the grant, and have someone sit there. So mm-hmm. we'd love to have inspectors at every boat launch, but it just isn't feasible.
Isn't in the cards. Right? Isn't in the cards. Fred in Wisconsin Rapids, thank you so much for calling. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, guys. I'm at my cabin up in the UP on a lake called Langford.
Uh-huh.
And we had a severe milfoil problem, and for several years we were involved in a study, and we were trying to study small areas, 40-acre plots of the lake, and treat it with Navigate, which we were unsuccessful. But in any event, we finally got approval for the use of a chemical. It's very expensive. I think it was approved in Wisconsin for usage, but not in Michigan. So we had a whole lake treatment, and it eradicated it 100%. But what I'm concerned about is we have a lake called Pomeroy not very far from us that's entirely in the federal, in the Ottawa National Forest, and it's full of milfoil, and the government isn't really doing anything to treat it. So I'm kind of concerned with these lakes that are all in federal forest land that might have invasive species, and nothing's being done to control it. I'm also in favor of maybe a surcharge or a stamp when we buy our fishing license that would go towards fighting invasive species. And then I also want to know how much cooperation is there like between Michigan and Wisconsin in fighting invasive species, where the border is the same and some of the lakes are even in part of Wisconsin and part of Michigan. That's my questions, guys.
Okay. Well, lots of good questions there, Bob.
Yeah. Wow. Where do I start? Let's start with the easy one, cooperation between Wisconsin and Michigan. I meet on a fairly regular basis with my counterpart in Michigan and many of the other Great Lakes states. Sarah Lesage is the Bob over there in Michigan, and Sarah and I meet at least twice a year and talk about aquatic invasive species and what we can do, what we've learned, what works, what doesn't work. And we're also trying to look for opportunities for collaboration. We received some federal dollars recently, and I'm going to be putting some of that toward a collaboration on the control of Phragmites, which is a wetland invasive species. And we're going to be asking Michigan and Minnesota to participate in that collaboration as well. I'm forgetting the other two questions.
Concerned about...
Federal.
Lakes that are entirely in federal.
Yeah, that's a tough one because there might not be anybody living on that lake. It might not be organized in the sense of an association or a district. So who do you go to? So you might go to the Forest Service, which is active in controlling invasive species, but it's not quite as easy. So the best bet is really to educate people that are using lakes. If there are volunteers or paid staff that can go and sit at the boat launch periodically and talk to boaters, educate them about the importance of not moving aquatic plants, that's really important. Also working with local law enforcement staff. Any law enforcement agent in the state of Wisconsin can write a citation to a boater that is dragging a trailer or boat down the highway that's got aquatic plants or water in it. It can be a county sheriff, a city police officer, conservation warden. So enforcement is a part of this. Obviously, that's not our preference, but it is one of the tools that's out there. Best bet is try to prevent it by educating boaters.
And thanks again for that question and comment. Oh, there was one other thing that he brought up, and that was why can't we have a stamp or something for our fishing licenses, or maybe when your boat license, why can't we have a stamp that would then go to work on invasives?
Well, other states have certainly done that. Minnesota has done that. In fact, if you're an out-of-state angler in Minnesota, you pay a higher fee for your fishing license, and some of that goes to aquatic invasive species. So there are certainly examples of that. That's something that the state of Wisconsin can certainly consider.
We have Stella in Sturgeon Bay up next. Thank you for calling, Stella. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to, one of the previous callers asked about the potential effects of zebra mussels being introduced into, a relatively small lake.
Mm-hmm.
We have property on Chambers Island, which is in the Bay of Green Bay in Door County.
Yep.
And our 900-foot formerly beautiful glacial till stone beach is now a zebra mussel shell beach. About probably anywhere from 5 to 8 feet deep, completely covered with zebra mussels. And at the dock, there's a bank of zebra mussel shells, which accumulate when they die, of about approximately 200 feet long by 50 feet wide by, on average, 10 feet deep.
Wow.
Wow.
So that is, and that's all around the island. I mean, zebra mussels are... Every beach now is a zebra mussel beach.
Yeah, I've heard of that as well, and I sympathize. That's an impact that most people aren't going to realize unless they're on some of these bigger bodies of water. Green Bay, Lake Winnebago, those have that type of a beach where you've got zebra mussels piling up due to windrows and that sort of stuff. There is a... you can get permission to remove that material fairly quickly through the Department of Natural Resources. We've recognized that that's a growing problem, so we've generated a. It's called a general permit that you can acquire, so that that material can be harvested and removed, so it just doesn't continue to accumulate.
No, but then what do you do with it?
Right.
Yeah, what do you do when you're on an island? What do you do with it? That's a really good question. Most people will just landfill it, or they'll even grind it up and try to make it into some reusable material.
Yeah, it's probably high in what, calcium would it be?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry for your issue there, Stella. It sounds like a terrible one, and boy, removing that, I mean, you'd have to get an end loader in or something to really do that work, wouldn't you?
And there's even been kind of a cottage industry where people have created these machines that grind it in place and lay it back down, so kind of make a sand material out of the zebra mussel shells.
Oh, well, that would seem a little more palatable.
Right.
Than what Stella was talking about, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks so much for calling. I'm sorry for your issue there, Stella. We had an email, a question from Marilyn in Beaver Dam. She said, my husband and I just took a trip along the Great River Road. Oh, there was a lot of purple loosestrife. Is there anything successful in eradicating it? And that is a better story, is it not?
That's a really good story. Brock Woods, who's been kind of in charge of our Purple Loosestrife program, has done an amazing job in the state of Wisconsin. What used to be purple seas of purple loosestrife in our wetlands, now you'll see some plants that are much smaller in size. You may still see a flower, but the plants are much reduced in size and number. And it's all due to a little beetle that's released. These beetles are grown by volunteers, and they're released by volunteers. It's one of the most successful stories we have when it comes to invasive species. And in this particular instance, we have a biological predator that is able to damage the plant enough, so it really stresses the plant. And in the state of Wisconsin, this little beetle has done a great job. It wouldn't have been possible without all the volunteers that raise these beetles and release them in the wetlands.
Yeah, and that's all they eat. They don't eat anything else, is my impression.
Right, that was really important. You know, we wanted something that wouldn't hurt anything else. So we made sure of that before we started using it, and it's been very successful.
Here we are running out of time. Paul, as the statewide coordinator of this lake monitoring network for UW Extension's Lakes program, I'm sure you're always looking for people who might be interested in what kinds of things would people be doing?
Sure. We train people to monitor water chemistry, water clarity, ice cover duration, aquatic invasive species, native aquatic plant communities. We're getting into lake level monitoring, so all these things are opportunities for these citizens. And as I said before, the training and the materials that they would use are provided to them for free. They can go to our UW Extension Lakes website to learn more about the Citizen Lake Monitoring Network. There's also a bunch of fact sheets on that website where they can learn about individual species if they're concerned about a particular one. And we're always welcoming new volunteers. They can contact me directly or any of the regional CLMN coordinators, and all that contact information is on the website.
So, and again, the website, we have a link to it on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, but what's the name of it again?
It's the UW Extension Lakes website. So if they were to search for that phrase, UW Extension Lakes, it would come up right away.
I like it because I like the idea too, because you can kind of pick. You don't have to do everything.
No, not at all.
You can pick something that you're really interested in and just go and do it.
Yep. And even if they're only interested in monitoring for one particular aquatic invasive species, they can pick and choose whatever you want to do. Yep.
And Bob, pretty good idea, huh?
I think it's a great idea. We benefit greatly by it.
And I want to thank both of you guys, and hopefully you can come back and do this again with us. It was a lot of fun to talk with you about a not-such-fun topic sometimes, these invasive species, but I really appreciate you being here, and we'll do it again. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure, Larry. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Paul Skowinski is the statewide coordinator of the Wisconsin Citizen Lake Monitoring Network through UW Extension's Lakes Program. Bob Wakeman, he's the guy at the DNR. He's the Water Resources Management Specialist and Director for the DNR. And he's the one who really does a lot of work with invasive aquatic species throughout the state of Wisconsin. Appreciate having both of them here. And we'll have them back again. Well, one of the things we've talked about over time is avian influenza, or bird flu, it's sometimes called. And we haven't done much with it for a while, and thought it was important to get an update on what's been going on. So we'll be talking with Paul McGraw, the state veterinarian with the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.